I love this song. I don't know that Nick necessarily gets as into the theme songs as I do. Hannah Stanley with you guys tonight, filling in for Nick DiGilio. I will be with you until 5 a.m. And then do we have Steve coming in tomorrow morning? Steve Krasanich?
I think so. Dave Plyer's got the opening bell, and I think does. Pete McMurray is going to be in for Steve Cochran.
That's exciting. I never get to see those two. That's very fun. I actually get to see Dave Plyer. I went over to Zany's in St. Charles to go see Steve Cochran and John DeCasse and my Mike Toomey do comedy. And Dave Plyer showed up. I was like, look at this. It's a whole WGN party.
He's a team player.
He is a team player, and that is not a quick trek for him. So, thanks to Patty Vasquez, by the way, if you guys were listening, I got to spend quite a bit of time with her, and she had Kit Masood on, who is a good friend of mine and also has an event coming up for Blessons, BLESSONS.org, Blessons.org, scholarships for women and all kinds of different mentorship stuff. Check them out, and I will be at her event on December 7th. Really, really fun show Patty had. They did a... The iTunes psychic was on. That was interesting. Told me I had to change my vibrations. Put it out into the universe.
I don't understand.
he says, you know, do you believe in that? That if you put out good energy, that you get good energy back?
I do, just in a general sense. Right. I don't know.
So he was saying that I needed to change kind of the vibration of the energy I was putting out into the world.
Okay.
Yeah.
How is he the iTunes psychic?
He listens. You tell him the last three songs you randomly heard.
Oh, okay.
And then he does a reading. That was very interesting. Hey, coming up tonight, in just a few minutes, we've got two incredibly funny men, Tyler Fowler and Vic Pandya from Team Us Comedy. They're going to talk about some upcoming events they have approaching and all kinds of great perspectives. But I'm really, really, I don't want to say I'm not excited for them because I am. They're coming up in just a few minutes. But coming up in the 3 o'clock hour, we have Steve Hall and Maurice Jones from LISC smallbusiness.org. They give out small business loans. Really, really, really great stuff, especially considering Small Business Saturday is coming up. And then we are going to talk about Dan and I talked about this off air, and I think we're definitely doing this because now I keep coming up with ideas. Christmas songs we hate. Because the Christmas station started even earlier this year. The station that plays all Christmas music, I think.
Yeah, it's like a hack bit by now, but it's true because
July 5th they started.
Yeah, every single year it starts earlier.
No, they do. Because before, I mean, the first year they went all Christmas, it was like the day after Thanksgiving. And then it was like the week before Thanksgiving. And now it's 12 minutes after the trick-or-treater stop, I think, is when it starts. And like XM has 42 different Christmas-only stations. They have themed Christmas stations now. It's like pop Christmas. So, but there's songs that turn on it. So I want to know, and you can text these in too, 312-981-7200 when we start talking about these, but you can text them in now. I don't care who sings it. I hate the Bing Crosby version of this song. No, I want the song you hate. I don't care who sings it. Hates it. Do you have one, Dan?
No, see, I need the 2 hours now to think of my answer.
Last
Christmas.
Because
the typical answers have kind of a weird, like the Paul McCartney song with the synths. I kind of like that because it sets the tone.
I don't know which one you're talking
Simply
about.
Simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
Simply. Yeah, okay. That's unfortunate that I might be start singing. But,
that'll be in your head.
Yeah, no. I don't like Last Christmas by Wham, George Michael. Wham. It's the worst. It's terrible. So keep thinking of your most hated Christmas song, the song that you turn off immediately, the song that you will break the album. If you call into 312-981-7200, Dan will make a list and we can go over those. But we will start talking about those in the 4 o'clock hour. You can also text those and we will keep a running list. And we'll also play parts of them, maybe. As I mentioned, Hannah Stanley, I'm filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio, and I will be with you until 5 a.m. Very excited to get to spend time talking with you all. Again, the text number, 312-981-7200. We're going to come back after this break and welcome Tyler Fowler and Vic Pandya right after this, WGN. Stanley here, filling in for Nick DiGilio, digging on the bump music. Dan Long producing for me. Currently in studio, two very handsome men. Very excited. Not for that reason. I'm very excited because they're funny. Vic Pandya and Tyler Fowler joining me. Team Us Comedy.
Yeah, two-thirds of Team Us Comedy in the building. Right now.
Who's the other third? Who are we missing?
We're missing Megan Dirty, who is now living in San Francisco.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been following that.
Yeah. She wants nothing to do with the current state of weather in Chicago.
Yeah.
So she's much happier.
Literally left today, actually.
Yeah.
To go back. Because she's been gone for a while.
Yeah, so she comes back every now and then. She's coming back to film with us in January, but she... Yeah, she took one look at today's weather and was like, nah, I'm good. Yeah.
Meg was very interesting. I learned a ton from her. I've done stand-up with her a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And every time I do, I just watch her. And she's like a method actor, but comedian, where she like gets almost super into character. She's studying her notes. I'm like... Wow!
Yeah,
we were literally just talking about this.
So funny.
Yeah,
she's amazing.
Yeah, and we were just saying she's such a strong writer that it's like her body is this like comedian robot that's like just full of great stuff. But yeah, she looks like a method actor who's like, I am a comedian now. Yeah,
yes.
It's great.
Like she'll step into that persona for sure.
Yeah, she was sitting on the floor of Zany's and pulled one word out of a line of a joke. And like was retiming it to make sure I was like, it's one word. How is that not going to, and she was practicing it over and over. And I was like, I need to learn from you.
She also is like, probably to her own fault, like a little inattentive too.
Yeah.
So she's
bit.
Like, yeah.
A little bit.
Which is funny because like most comedians are like, oh, fly by the seat of my pants. Like it's whatever. It's not structured or anything. And she's like, no, I would like it to be very structured.
Yeah.
I would like
Please give me an outline before
the
set.
Like, I want to treat comedy like it's like a corporate, like everything.
It's very scientific
in a nice box.
For
yes,
her.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, it was so. Here's a little thing too. She had a hole in her tights, and she lost her mind.
This sounds like
This sounds like like Meg to a
Meg life. She was right now. Oh my god! And I really like. I mean, especially in comedy, you see a ton of people, media, entertainment in general.
Yeah.
I was like, maybe that's her look. I don't know.
No,
this
definitely
is
not.
The first time I had met her, and then all of a sudden I realized how completely stressed she was, and I was like, I have a Sharpie. We'll color your leg, and so that was a thing that happened. But so Meg is the third.
Yeah, Meg is the third. We started a little comedy troupe 2015, us three producing shows. We all met in improv class, and then we I was doing a little bit of stand-up at the time. They hadn't started. Meg had done some. Mm-hmm. Tyler hadn't really done any, and then we kind of all started doing stand-up like heavily together at the same time, and then started producing shows like probably what, 4 months in, 5 months, like very too soon.
Yeah. Too soon is the very best way to say it.
Yeah, that was interesting because we started producing shows and we come from like 9-to-5 jobs, like, you know, business world. Mm-hmm. So we're in the comedy, we got one foot in the comedy world, one foot in the business world. So when we produced our first show, we like invited all of our friends that were not comedians, just like normal people.
Right.
And they came, like, we had a great show. So we were like, oh, we're like master producers now.
Yeah.
And we're going to do this again. And then like we did it again next month and we invited every comedian we had met like up until that point because we were just like really excited to be part of the scene. Mm-hmm. And we had a 2.5-hour long show.
But like 150 people came.
Yeah. So no, 200 people came.
Yeah, it was way too much.
Here's the thing. For you listening, that's insane. That doesn't happen.
It does not happen. Yeah.
You guys had such a bad idea of what you were capable of.
Oh, 100%. Yes. So, and we're riding that to this day.
Yeah. And that's the thing,
2 years later.
Is like that show set the standard of like production, the standard of like talent. Like, we were just like, we have to match this quality on every show. So it almost like forced us to get good. And but also that was a huge learning experience for us. We're like, first of all, probably not good to book two headliners and have one go at the top and have one go at the end. That's why they're called headliners.
Yeah,
like,
no,
what were we doing? Yeah. We're like, yeah, we'll just have one open. Like, what?
That's okay. So here's the thing. For the lay person, non-comedy fan, that's like the super special Christmas present. Open that first.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's dumb. You got to build to that.
Exactly.
You got to give some heated toilet seats out. You got to.
It's also like a timing thing. Like, you don't want to. Like, a headliner does the most time typically, right? So you don't start with one who does like 20 minutes, then go into the someone doing 10. It's a weird structure time where you have to build up in time.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make any sense.
There is more of a rhythm and a science to it than many people would realize. I'm glad you guys mentioned doing improv. One of the shows I did a few months ago was talking about kind of what theater in Chicago and the improv scene and the comedy scene has meant to the country. Did you guys all grow up here? Or did you come here for this?
We both did. Yeah. Meg grew up in Virginia, just outside D.C., and she came to Chicago, I don't think with comedy in mind. She got it, her and I worked together at the time, and she came here for a job. But then we both dove into doing comedy. So I think comedy was in the back of her mind when she came to Chicago, but it wasn't necessarily like, oh, the improv capital of
America. Yeah, you didn't
America.
Go, let's go to Chicago for...
But I forget that, and we're so spoiled because Vic and I are both from the western suburbs, and... we're so spoiled that comedy and like improv is in our backyard in Chicago. Like now meeting so many people and working with people who are taking class in Second City, there are people who uproot their lives to come here to study comedy and to study improv. And I'm like, oh my God, I happened upon this.
Yeah, no, literally. You know, we did. Like,
it was a happy accident, but there are people who just like, yeah, I moved here for this. This
it's crazy.
Improv is why I came to Chicago.
Right.
Especially when you meet people like from other parts of the country when you're like traveling and touring and doing shows. Like people are like, yeah, you know, I get on stage like 3 times a week and you're like, I can get on stage 3 times a night in Chicago if I wanted to, you know? Like, it's crazy. Like, you get so... That's why you can never complain about stage time in Chicago, because you can get it if you want it.
If you want it, absolutely. The but I have noticed so many people will come here to take classes, not even to be on main stage or to do presentations, you know, writing classes, et cetera. And then all of a sudden they'll go... Oh, you're from Chicago? Like, do you go to Second City? And I'm like, well, yeah. I mean, it's right there.
Yeah.
You almost take it for granted.
Yeah, you forget that not everyone else has that. Even just like the classes. You know, for a lot of people, this is their alternative to going to a university. You know, I want to study comedy. This is where you go to do it. You know?
Right. Yeah. No, even in the suburbs, there's comedy classes.
Yeah.
You can take improv classes all over. And it's not normal. It's not the norm.
Yeah.
But it does, I think, put performers in the city who do take advantage of this at an advantage in at least for other people think that we're at the advantage because we've been able to have access to all of these classes.
Yeah. I mean, I tell people all the time, like people are like ask me about like what about doing shows on the road and things like that? Like, is that worth it? And I'm like, the one kind of cool thing about it is whenever you go outside of Chicago and people are like, oh, you're from Chicago, like you have a little bit of a chip on your people expect a lot from you, but it's also nice because you can also validate your material outside of Chicago and you can be like, oh, I'm a comedian from Chicago, like here's my, like I have 20 minutes, like they'll give you time because you're from Chicago and they'll let you do.
Really?
So it's interesting. Like, I mean, the thing is, though, I'm sure that's been also ruined by a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say the same thing. Is like, just like we said, like the first time we started producing shows, they were like more successful than they should have been. So it forced us to kind of rise to the occasion.
Yes.
Like, same thing. The first couple times we like got out of town and like would do road trips and do shows. They're like, oh, you're from Chicago? Like, oh, like we'll put you on for 10 or 15 minutes. And at the time I was like, okay, better get together 10 or 15
I'm like,
minutes.
I'm running my hot eight
right
now.
Yeah.
I'm like, maybe if I just pause here really long, they'll build a tent.
Early, within our first year, Meg and I went on a trip to South Carolina, and our first stop was in Indiana, in a small town in Indiana. And there was some guy on the show, and they're like, we have two comedians from out of town in Chicago and one comedian in from Los Angeles. And we're like, oh, man, we thought we were the hot item from being from Chicago. There's this guy from L.A. This guy gets up there, and he goes, to be clear, I'm just a guy who lives in L.A. This is my first time doing comedy. But he's like, I had to come to Indiana to do it for the first time because there's no way I was doing comedy for the first time in L.A. And I was like, okay, cool. Good for you.
Yeah, that's so funny.
I was sitting at Zany's one night and somebody was saying, you know, I've got 8 minutes and I have to get to 10 because they had already booked a 10-minute spot. And they said, just do it slower.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just
100%.
Do your 8 minutes slower. It'll
yeah.
be fine.
I mean, it's weird when you start, like, when you start doing comedy too, you learn to do everything in like 3 to 5 minute chunks because mm-hmm. that's what mics are. So you're like, yeah, maybe 2 or 3 bits, but you learn to consolidate it into that time. And then you probably will either go long or short every time. But then when you get an opportunity to do 10, you're like, wait, this is like 2 separate sets. I have to merge. Mm-hmm. And you just start to think of it so differently. But it's a weird process. Like, that's what, yeah, when you do the road gate, they're like, oh, yeah, do 15. You're like, well, I've done 3 fives.
Yeah, yeah. Which is a collective 11. I
yeah.
Two,
yeah.
2 minutes of that.
But they
is
both
a
have their own openers yeah. and closers. I don't yeah. know how to lump this together mm-hmm. into one cohesive set.
But it was a lot of those, like, being forced to rise to the occasion of things like that. Like, the first time we started producing shows, we have to do more time or to host for the first time.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, we're getting out on the road for the first time and getting more time is like forcing us to rise to a lot of those occasions, I feel like helped kind of push us along.
For those who are new to this or are listening going, I want to start in comedy. This has always been a dream of mine. I'm relatively new. I've only been doing it a couple, maybe almost 2 years. But you guys both started doing improv. But how did you start doing comedy? Because that's not as seamless as it would seem.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you even get into improv? I forget.
I mean, I think I actually funny. I did improv purely because I wanted to do stand up and
really?
I did my first open mic with no like improv training. I just like went and did it, signed up, bombed so bad mm-hmm. at Shubas, just horrendously. And I was like, I can't do this. And then I'm like, there must be resources for people. So I did some research and I found Second City. I'm like, there's a stand up class at Second City. I'm like, maybe this is what all the greats do. But then I looked at the stand up class. I'm like, there's prereqs. Because again, like Tyler was saying, it's like a college, right? This is a mm-hmm. university. Like, it's a school. It's not just like for fun. And the prereqs were improv A and B. So I was like, I'll do improv A and B at Second City, which are the first 2 levels. And then I'll take the stand-up class and I'll stop doing improv. So I honestly took improv to do stand-up. And it was really funny because that's when I met Meg and Tyler. Mm-hmm. And then I just stuck with improv and I started doing stand-up like at around the same time. And just started doing both. So yeah, it's really interesting how that happened.
Yeah,
actually.
You like bit the bug and you're like, I'm on board.
And then it's been so helpful to continue doing improv and stand up at the same time because mm-hmm. we would go to mics together and like we would go as a team kind of and like go and write and then give each other notes after. And like it would be basically like using improv fundamentals to stand up. Mm-hmm. Because stand-up is a very lonely art form, right? Like, you go and hang out, you think you're like in front of all these people, but you're delivering something to people, and then you're going home by yourself and being like, why did I do that? So,
and so and everyone else is thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Why did he do that?
And literally, it was kind of cool because we didn't realize it at the time, but we were literally just using improv to get better at stand-up.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And then, Tyler, you were kind of on the same path.
Yeah, so Meg and I... She had done some comedy before and a little bit of stand-up in college, but it was a happy accident. I kind of fell into it because the company that we worked for at the time would pay for classes at Second City.
No way!
Yeah, in the same way that they would like pay for other continuing education or help support you in that way.
I need to go to there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a handful of companies that do it, and there's like big Chicago companies that do it all the time. So we worked for a creative advertising agency, so that was like they were churning people there. So that inertia alone, I was like, well, it's free. You're like, I can't
right.
not. Right.
Yeah.
But
get
then
in that
loved
line.
It right away. Met a bunch of like the group that we started with are still like great friends, like our best friends who we still perform with.
So and our then, house team for one of our shows.
Yeah. Mm. And then Meg, Vic and I kind of just started working together on everything comedy. And it's been very downhill from there.
Yeah. Why do you think she left? She was over it.
She
yeah.
was done.
As soon as we incorporated, she's like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Tyler Fowler and Vic Pandya, we are going to talk more with them about comedy in Chicago and upcoming events they have coming up that I don't know. Okay, it's 2:30 in the morning. So That's all. Well, I'll just be really fluid after the news. Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. I'll be with you guys till 5 a.m. on WGN. Welcome back, WGN Radio. This is Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio with you guys until 5 a.m. I've been told Dave Flyer is coming in and then Pete McMurray I love it when those guys are in. It's so fun. It feels like the holidays for me when everybody else, when it's like a normal, it's not the normal shift. So holidays are approaching. If you heard us talking earlier, we are going to be discussing our least favorite Christmas song, because I think we need to start hashing that out. That's a thing that's real. 312-981-7200. You can text those in starting now. We'll be having a full conversation about that in the 4 o'clock hour. Joining me right now, I've got Vic Pandya and Tyler Fowler, two-thirds of Team Us Comedy. I don't want to say which favorite of my two-thirds. That's because, you know, Meg's not here, so that would be rude. That would be rude to rank you guys. What are your least favorite Christmas songs?
Oh, man. I spent the best years of my life working at Kmart.
As most do.
Yeah.
And living the dream.
Kmart is one of those stores, as we all know, that they're an operation on a budget. So they license the rights to maybe 20 Christmas songs they play on loop from...
In all their stores.
All their stores from Halloween straight through the New Year. Mm-hmm. So still, some of those versions of those songs, when I hear them to this day, I will cringe. Like, have a physical reaction.
Like the Bob Hope version of Silver Bells?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any others?
I don't even know. It's actually, I had a similar... I worked at... The first job I had was at Jewel. I was a bagger at Jewel Osco.
This is a great mental picture.
Yeah, it was not good. And
high school Vic.
Yeah, high school. I worked there, I think, for 2 weeks before they fired me.
Wait, why did you get fired?
Because I refused.
Here we go. Okay, sorry.
Okay.
Yep.
I refused to do some stuff. I refused to, what was it? You know how, like, they have people go and get the carts from, like, the parking lot?
Yeah, like, so, one of those duties of the job?
Yeah. No, so I was doing that, right? And then every time I noticed I would do my shift, like, the person right before my shift would deliberately wait till I got there to do it.
Sure.
So I was like, I'm not going to stand for this, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to make a little stand.
So you worked there during Christmas.
I worked there during Christmas, and same thing with the songs. I think they had 8.
Oh,
this is worse.
I mean, they're a local operation.
You know what, though? Yeah. They probably had it timed out to how long people shopped for. Yeah. And that's maybe like a 40-minute shopping trip.
Maybe that is the... Yeah. Yeah, there's some sign. I don't think they're actually...
So basically,
you know, they're not that smart.
If you're a Jewel and you hear the same song twice, it's time to get out.
Yeah.
You've been there too long.
Go home.
You need to stop looking for the jicama. Yeah. It's not there.
Get that peppermint ice cream and get out. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually such a thing that you would buy at Jewel, because they don't have that at Target,
that right
I don't
now.
Think.
Sounds good.
They're probably open.
24? Well, actually, no. Speaking of them on a budget, they used to be 24 hours. At least the one in my neighborhood. Now it's not.
No?
Yeah.
Well,
Who was there? I mean, come on.
I was, I hate the George Michael last Christmas. That's mine.
Ooh. That's sad.
I don't, and I've heard other people have recorded this. I don't know if it's recent or not. I don't care, because the moment it starts, I'm flipping the channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hate it. Yeah, with all passion.
I don't know what it is, but I feel like now, I mean, now there's like rappers coming out with Christmas albums.
Sure.
It's not just the old school stuff anymore. So I don't necessarily hear when I walk around, I feel like I hear new age.
You're like the modern.
The modern Christmas stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Which I don't know if it's good or bad, but I don't hear the traditional songs as much anymore.
Because it used to be that people would just record the classics on their
version.
Yeah. So Barry Manilow Christmas was just standards in Barry Manilow's voice. Now they're all coming up with unique and creative, this is going to be the new standard. And I'm like, not so much, Taylor Swift. Yeah. I don't care what you think.
As an artist, you would think like that was the best thing going, is like, let me just pick up all these classic songs and I'll just sing them. Like Barry Manilow is like, all you need to do is lend my voice to some songs that exist and let's cash that check.
I'm going to owe Mandy this. This is perfect. All right, you guys, Team Us Comedy, two-thirds, Tyler and Vic, what is going on with y'all? What's coming up?
So the big thing that we're working on now is January 6th, we're recording a live one-hour comedy special at CH Distillery. It's in the West Loop here in Chicago. We host a monthly show there, and we've been working for close to a year now, probably, and putting together this special. It's going to be Vic, myself, and Meg, the one continuous hour of the best comedy that we can put together between the three of us. So,
and trust me, I've seen all of them perform stand-up. It does not suck in any manner. It's all really, really funny. So tickets available?
Yep, tickets available at teamuscomedy.com. We're doing two shows, a 6 and an 8:30 p.m. So we're trying to, like, usually we sell in that space probably, like, 50 tickets, but we're trying to like maximize. We've changed things around a little bit, we're trying to get like 60 plus in there in each show. So it should be fun. And I think people will, that space itself is so cool. It's so unique mm-hmm. that like just the experience alone will be like, we're okay too, but the ambiance is yeah. nice. You want a good time
Rick,
out.
You were such a salesman.
Yeah. yeah. It's hard. Yeah. I'm like trying to be excited. It's 3 a.m.
Wow. Yeah. I want to go to that. Yeah. That's
no, it is
going to
be. It's gonna, we're super excited about it. It's going to be awesome. And yeah. CH Distillery is great because the space is really nice. They have a really nice bar, but they let us use the back distilling room with actually, they distill their own vodka and bourbon.
Yeah. So the backdrop of the stage is yeah. really the tanks where like mm-hmm. vodka is being made.
Oh, that's great.
Which is
yeah.
very cool.
Yeah, it is a very cool thing.
And their booze is obviously very good because it's made right
yes.
there.
That's how we got the show. Yeah. I just would drink there a lot, and they after shows I would go there.
Weird things have happened.
Yeah, and then yeah. they're like, I would be talking to the staff and stuff, and one time they're like, "Are you a comedian?" I'm like, "Yeah, we should do a show here," like kind of jokingly, and they're like, "All right, you want to do it?"
So,
yeah.
Except no one has here ever asked keys. You if you're a comedian because you've
True.
Already told.
I've told them. Probably.
Oh, you're like the CrossFit person.
Oh yeah, that's the perfect way to say it. That is exactly the perfect way to say
I'm
it.
I'm like, oh, do you see that drop? Oh, that was my business card. So let me pick that yeah. up.
I'm sorry.
Sorry about that.
Let me pick up that name I just dropped. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we didn't realize it had been a year of producing shows there. Like it flew by. Mm-hmm. And we're like, wow, we've been in this space for a year. Like that's like our home club, if you want to call it
sure.
that.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we made it into a comedy club essentially.
That's great. And that's January 6th, which is great because a lot of times we get through New Year's Eve and then we're like, okay, well, nothing fun happens
yeah,
until
that's very
March.
True.
I'll just yeah, give it a week, you guys. One
I mean,
week later.
I can confidently say now it's the best event of 2018.
There you go. Yes.
Already.
Yeah, that'll probably be my best set in 2018.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be good.
That's outstanding. What else is going on with you guys? Where can people see you?
This Wednesday, we're doing a special Black Wednesday show in Oak Park at Hamburger Mary's Oak Park, which is also Oak Park Brewing Company. I think mm-hmm. it's 155 South Oak Park Avenue, right downtown.
I think everything is on Oak Park Avenue.
Right? Yeah, yeah, it literally is in that.
Yeah.
yeah, yeah, right off the Oak Park Green Line stop. Mm-hmm. We help run. They do a weekly Thursday comedy show there, but since it's the holiday, we're doing like a special Wednesday show. But if you don't want to come to this one next week, every week after, it's a Thursday 8 p.m. show in Oak Park. Features like top stand-ups and improv, which is mm-hmm. kind of cool.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
A little bit of a variety show.
Advice for people trying to start out.
Yes.
Okay.
I was going to say no.
It's like run for your life.
Yeah. Save yourself. Yeah. No, it was really funny because I did this. I was telling Tali about this mic I did on Monday, and there was all these kids there that were clearly like some sort of group, some sort of like, you know, first time, like they're doing. They're all like way too happy to be at an open mic. So I knew there was something wrong yeah. from the get go. yeah. But they're
clearly
all like very young too,
before.
Like probably, you know, 16, you know.
Really?
And yeah, they're all going up and like they're all being supportive and stuff. And it was really funny because I was like, is this like mic sponsored by MTV2? Like, what is going on here? Like, who is taking over this mic, right?
Does MTV now do comedy? I didn't know.
I mean, they don't do music videos, so I don't know what they're doing. Yeah, they're doing
something.
They
got to do something. Yeah, something.
But it was like the Scared Straight program. I'm like, this is why you should stay in school. Like, it was really funny.
You don't want to grow up be like me.
Yeah, don't do this. No, I mean, I would encourage, I think, Tyler, you can say this too. Like, I would encourage everyone to take at least an improv class. I would.
Yeah.
think that's something that will change your way of thinking mm-hmm. and how you interact with
even
everyone.
Just like for the sake of meeting people who are you're going to be friends with
yeah.
and like making friends in comedy and just enjoying it. Because there's something, especially like if you jump into doing stand up and like open mics, let's say 8.5 times out of 7 are bad, right? Like
yeah.
you had a bad time. It's nice to have something in comedy that's like supporting you and fulfilling you and you like are always going to be happy about because that will keep you doing the stuff that's miserable until it gets good.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Yeah. And I think the improv classes are important or can be valuable at least to many people in different walks of life. Salespeople.
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
People doing presentations. Anybody who has like social anxiety. I've read about other actors, like famous actresses who got into this because they started taking improv classes in high school because they had severe anxiety.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Second City even, like, I remember the first level, they ask everyone, like, why are you here? And then, like, half the people are like, I have anxiety or, like, my therapist told me to come. So
yeah.
it's a twofold reason. But, yeah, because it helps you conquer those fears. And kind of what you're talking about, you know, helping with presentation skills and stuff like that. Like, one of the other parts of Team Us is, like, we host and teach improv workshops. So to companies, like, around the city. So we'll go in and use the fundamentals of improv to, like, tailor a workshop for a company. And actually help their employees like conquer those fears and build on those skills and all that stuff.
Team building. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like, it's great because it's companies love it and it's, the skills are so transferable to, you know, business or mm-hmm. professional life.
All right. So if you're interested in starting out in comedy or in improv, do it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
And but enjoy it.
Especially
and honestly, yeah. Because like he said, like it's do something, do a couple things that way. Stand up, while it is a grind initially, I mean, it does get fun. And mm-hmm. it will be fun early on too, but it's like, it will get consistently good.
Okay, so you said the first time you walked off stage, you had a terrible time on stage.
Oh, I didn't do
stage.
It for, yeah, probably 2 or 3 months after
But
that,
you knew
yeah.
you wanted to.
I knew I wanted to, but I didn't think it was going to be as hard as it was. Because you watch it on TV and it's like, you're watching the pros, right?
Yeah. Right.
So you're
that's
think,
their job, right?
Yeah,
to make it look easy.
That's their job, and they make it look like a conversation. They make it look, but you don't realize how meticulous everything is. You don't realize that like people are writing in those pauses, like people are thinking about that stuff, and you know, there's
everything that seems off the cuff is completely. Yeah.
And even just at the time, like thinking about if it's your first time doing comedy, maybe the only time you've seen comedy is on TV. The comedy you're seeing on TV has been in the works for 2 years.
Yep.
Probably at minimum. Yeah. TV.
And then you go to open mic and you're like, but that gave me false confidence because I went to the open mic and I was like, I saw just 20 comedians in a row bomb. And I was like, I know I'm probably going to do like bad, but I can at least get like to that level. I did worse, which I don't know if that's possible. Right. I like went negative.
When you see
know?
Like 10 people bombing and you're like, as long as I'm not the worst,
yes.
you know?
And then the thing that pissed me off the most was after the mic where all the comedians are like, and it's people, none of them do comedy to this day. This is how bad this mic was. Maybe this ruined careers forever. But after the mic, people are like walking up to each other like, hey man, good set to me. And I was like, I know internally that was horrible.
That was
and I know you
set.
Did bad too. Right. We all did really bad.
But it's a supportive community, people.
And that's
don't be
that
afraid.
Though is, yeah, it is a very supportive community. Mm-hmm. So you do have people who are, because literally everyone's going through it with you. Like you meet another comic and you instantly have a bond with them because you're like, we go through this together.
Well, that's how you and I met. That's how you and I met, exactly. Tyler. It's interesting too because we do shows at Zany's and there'll sometimes be 10 or 11 of us on the bill. And I always take a picture of the set list and I'm like friending people on Facebook because it's nice. You can like, hey, remember we met that one time? And that's how I helped Meg do some stuff. And yeah, so it is a very supportive community, at least here in the Chicagoland area. So I encourage people, if you've wanted to do this, as I did for a very long time, and then finally got up the nerve, make 2018 your year to be brave.
And there's like, especially for stand-up, the barrier to entry is literally just going to an open mic and signing up.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do that at any night of the week. There's like 10 chances.
And it's super easy to find it. I mean, it's not like the old days where you had to like stumble into a bar that happened to have an open mic. Yeah. You can just Google it and there's a Chicago open mic list.
The website.
Team Us Comedy, January 6th is your big event. Tickets are still available at Team Us Comedy.
Yeah, we didn't say the name of the special. The name of the special is Friends with 401k Benefits. So check that out. Yeah.
Friends with 401k.
That's a nice way to sum that up.
Benefits. Yeah. I'm writing this down. Friends with, 401k Benefits. Vic Pandia and Tyler Fowler, thanks so much for coming in, you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
All right. And Wednesday night, tomorrow night.
Yep,
yeah,
tomorrow.
Tonight, technically tonight. That's going to be at Hamburger Mary's
Hamburger Mary's
Park, normally on Thursdays.
Correct.
Yep.
Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio, back in just a minute on WGN. My thanks to Tyler Fowler and Vic Pandia for coming in, talking about their upcoming comedic endeavors and events they've got coming up and really how to kind of get started doing comedy and improv here in the city. It's so much easier here than it could be other places. Like, we're not in Poughkeepsie, people. Although maybe Poughkeepsie is a good comedy scene. I don't know.
I do always hear East Coast comedians plug some comedy clubs in like Poughkeepsie or so, like obscure like upstate New York towns.
Really?
We'll be at Bananas and
the Catskills.
Yeah.
Well, I think so maybe we will research this during the news, but I think maybe because the Catskills are and were the Catskills, you know, when like the Dirty Dancing era when they used to have showrooms and dancing and things like that. So I think they still have areas where they, you know, have hotbeds of talent. I'm also guessing they probably have some casinos up there. That's kind of a thing.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's going on. Did we hear about, did you hear about that story in Aurora? There's a man in Aurora, Illinois, who was pulled over. This happened like a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. He was pulled over for driving his lawnmower down the street. He was intoxicated. Illinois is becoming Florida, and they're going fast. He was, I'm pulling up the story. This was in the Chicago Tribune. Man charged with driving lawn tractor while drunk on Aurora Street. Yep.
This is straight out of You Big Dummy, like Nick would do.
See, I'm doing my best to do the closest to Nick show. But it really, as I read this, I was like, are we... I mean, honestly, if it's going to be this much like Florida, I should have the better weather. That's all there is to it. Because you can't shovel sunshine. That's what they'll tell you. You know that, right? Can't shovel sunshine. I don't want to shovel. I'm not. I'm kind of dreading the shoveling. I'm thrilled that we haven't had to shovel thus far. Were you down here when it snowed the other day? No. I saw the pictures that that demonstrated that it had snowed down here, but it didn't snow out by me.
Yeah, we got pure just rain out by us. Yeah. I got here and just looking at the rooftops got a little dusting.
Yeah, but for me it was nothing out west. And yeah, my favorite part of the story that this man was arrested for driving his lawnmower while intoxicated is they figured that he was in fact intoxicated when he stopped to urinate in someone's yard. Yeah, this is nice. Yeah, that's because George Jones did this.
Yeah,
George Jones was arrested for driving his lawnmower while intoxicated. I think that's still a DUI. My favorite part of the story, though, is that they ended the article by saying that the lawnmower was towed and impounded. The John Deere lawn tractor was towed and impounded. I will post that article on my Facebook page, Hannah Stanley. You can find me on Facebook. I will post that that story up for y'all so you can read it. Yes, he was urinating in someone's yard. They assumed, therefore, he was intoxicated, and he was, in fact, breathalyzed and then arrested.
Usually a good indicator, urinating in the yard.
Yeah, apparently he tried to fight with police.
Also a good indicator.
He tried to fight with police and Aurora, Illinois, not Florida. Aurora, Illinois, not Florida. Hey, are we going to break before news or
yes,
how am I doing
should,
as far
we
as
we shall
time?
Take a break and then we'll hit the news.
You guys, this show is flying. It's flying. And I'm excited because next hour we are going to be welcoming Maurice Jones and Steve Hall from LISC Small Business. We're going to talk about Small Business Saturday and how you can get loans for your small business, your great idea, and how you can get your own part of the American dream. That's going to be on the other side of news. And on the other side of news, first, that's news is on the other side of this break. So Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio on WGN. All right, you guys, we are back. It's WGN Radio. Hannah Stanley tonight in for Nick DiGilio. And you know what? With the holiday coming up this week, one of the things that I am very excited to talk about, and I don't think gets nearly enough attention, is Small Business Saturday. Having friends with small businesses and really seeing a resurgence of small business throughout the Chicagoland community and throughout the country, who better to talk about is my next guest, Steve Hall and Maurice Jones from LISC Small Business. We are talking to them today because they are the lenders, the people who make this possible. Welcome, you guys. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. I want to, one, make note that Maurice flew in today for this interview. What a nice man. That was so wonderful. Thank you. But also, that demonstrates so much how important Small Business Saturday is to our country, to our community, and what you guys are doing. So thank you again for your time.
Absolutely.
Now, this program that you guys have put together and are working for, is it a local program or is it a national program for the lending for small businesses?
It's national. So LISC, as we are called.
Mm-hmm.
We have 31 offices around the country, from Buffalo, New York, to Houston, Texas, to San Diego. Now, the headquarters, though, of the work is right here in Chicago with Steve and team. But we do this all across the country.
What has changed in the environment for small businesses since we came through the recession? I think we're through the recession. You guys would be better able to inform me of that. But we saw so many shops close up and get shuttered, and I'm really starting to see things open back up. People are hopeful. What are the actual numbers on this?
I wouldn't say that in 2008, when the recession happened, a great deal of small businesses didn't have the appropriate amount of capital to survive. I mean, they went to banks. Banks weren't lending. They tried alternative lenders. They weren't lending. So you probably saw numbers say somewhere between 22 and 27% of all businesses closed their doors.
Wow.
And that was a very scary number. And a number of businesses, they wanted to restart, but there still wasn't, you know, capital available. So a lot of entrepreneurs, they took jobs at other organizations just to, you know, put food on the table. But as we came out of the recession, so I want to say around 2012, 2013, that entrepreneurial spirit came back and people got excited about starting businesses again and getting out there and creating opportunities for themselves and their communities. But the banks never went back to that space.
Right.
So. Yeah. And I would just add to that, you know, if you look at what's happening in the country, you've got this incredible digital revolution occurring. In fact, you've got multiple digital revolutions that are coming one right after the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so a big piece of why you're seeing so many small companies is you're seeing a lot of technology startups. The other industry that I would tell you that is a huge driver of small businesses is the healthcare industry.
Interesting.
And so between the two, you are really just getting this incredible proliferation of small businesses that are both suppliers to larger businesses in these two industries, and they are part of the innovation that is happening in these industries that is happening at a pace that our country really has not seen before. When you think of, you know, how long it's taken. Think of the iPhone, just to give you an example.
It's been 10
years. What
are
we on, the iPhone 10?
10, yeah.
10, yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
We're on the iPhone 10. The rate at which technological innovation is occurring is part of what is growing small businesses these days in ways that, you know, that are just, it's just robust.
Well, and even 10 years ago, no one really planned to open, let's say, a bakery and worried about their website and their Facebook page and all of the different components to that, to have an online presence. Now that's something you can do first.
Absolutely.
You know, coming soon. And these are things we're going to offer. And what would you guys as consumers be interested in?
Yeah.
Even started out of you know, the garage or selling at bake sales, you can find us here. That's a different model for getting into business, raising capital, proving your business model to organizations like yourself. I want to address your comment about healthcare. Are we seeing an influx of healthcare related businesses because of the aging population, the baby boomers?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. And that'll continue. And you're seeing it also because healthcare is moving outside of the clinical setting into the home.
Right? Where it used to be.
Where it used
to be. That pendulum swinging all the way back.
It's a circle of life. And so, you know, arguably one of the fastest growing segments in healthcare is home healthcare.
Okay.
And as we continue to age and as we want our loved ones to age in their homes, guess what? The opportunity for more business segments in this space will continue to grow.
I keep talking to my husband that we need to come up with an idea for what to do with the elderly communities when the baby boomers don't need them anymore, because we're going to have a lot of these facilities.
Robots.
We're going to have a lot of these facilities empty.
I think, well, you know, one of the great things we do at LIS is you may say you'll have some senior centers that'll be available, but that could become affordable housing.
Right.
So, I mean, that is another, you know, line of business that we do that Maurice heads for us throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
Low income, you know, housing, tax credit work. We do that in a number of communities to give people an opportunity to have a nice place to live. So even though healthcare moved back there, we have such a holistic, you know, vision when it comes to community and economic development. We really strive to, you know, make a sustainable community for all. And whether it's urban or rural areas, I mean, that's what our primary focus is.
Well, and when we create jobs, we lower crime and we increase education and we do all kinds of great things for the community to make it better functioning and healthier.
Absolutely.
Overall. LISCsmallbusiness.org is the website, LISC, smallbusiness.org. Steve Hall is the vice president of small business lending. He is here with me today, as well as Maurice Jones, CEO, who flew in for this. You are only the second person I know of that has flown in to have an interview.
It's the greatest city in the world.
It is the power of WGN. That is that is for sure. One of the things that drew me to you guys and to your story were a few of the small businesses that you guys had really helped foster and develop and create. You allowed to come on here in the city of Chicago. Tell me one or two of those.
You know, I'm really excited about, you know, our customers, and especially the ones in Chicago, because I'm biased. I'm from Chicago.
You're here. So, you're one of us.
So we helped a great woman-owned business open up in Washington Park, a restaurant called Evelyn's Food Love, and we were real excited. I mean, it's this classic Chicago story, city of 1,000 restaurants. There's always a chef or someone who is, you know, great culinary skills looking to open a restaurant. And most banks don't want to do restaurant startup. They're extremely risky.
Very.
It's really hard to, you know, pick the winners and losers, primarily because, you know, you want to open here, you want to open there, you know.
Well, there's what?
There's 20 of them on every block.
There is, and there's 1,042 variables that, you know, the food is great, but the staff isn't. There's so many things that could go wrong.
So with her particular strategy, she wanted to open up a restaurant in the food desert. So where there wasn't a lot of restaurant competition, where there wasn't a lot of healthy food options, where, you know, there wasn't a lot of opportunities for people in the community to get jobs. So it kind of fit our mission of, you know, how do we bring, you know, economic opportunities to a community to catalyze, you know, different opportunities. So she created 5 jobs in that business. She has created hope for the youth in that community. I mean, they walk by and they say, wow, I didn't know this was a restaurant. You know, I want to go in here. And how do I get a job here in the summer?
Mm-hmm.
And she's created a sense of community. Like what she's learned in the time that she's been there is like, oh, there was a restaurant here 40 years ago. Like the place was boarded up for about 15, 20 years.
Wow.
And so she's brought life and hope back to the community. So we looked at that project and we said, you know what, this is kind of our core mission. This is something we want to do for the people of this community. And guess what? We found the right operator to make the opportunity work. And that's still the key. I mean, we're doing anything. We're not doing nothing that unique. We are still, you know, doing loans. But there are a lot of people out there with a lot of great ideas, a lot of passion, and a lot of energy. And we want to allow them to kind of, you know, do their dream if they've done the appropriate steps to make themselves successful.
We're going to talk more about LISC Small Business. And again, the website is lisksmallbusiness.org, L-I-S-C. My guest tonight, Steve Hall and Maurice Jones. More talking about Small Business Saturday and how you guys can help reach out to them and fund your own dreams as well as far as small businesses, and really how we can celebrate Small Business Saturday and how our country was really founded and built on these small businesses. Hannah Stanley tonight filling in for Nick DiGilio back on WGN right after this. We are back. It's WGN. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Hannah Stanley filling in for the entire shift for Nick DiGilli. I'll be with you until 5 a.m. this morning, and I will turn it over to Steve Krzyzanich. This is one of my favorite weeks of the year. Of course, it's Thanksgiving. We all know the family celebrations that go along with that. Then Black Friday, for those who celebrate. I'm not a huge partaker. I'm a consistent Amazoner. But I will tell you, one of the things I do make a priority is on Saturday, I go out and either online shop with small businesses, because that is a thing. E-commerce is so much easier for small businesses now. And I try to really put my money into my own community and keep that local and support people who are really pursuing the ultimate American dream, and you know, being an entrepreneur and finding their own niche in the world. My guests currently, Steve Hall and Maurice Jones. Maurice is CEO of LISC Small Business. If you missed the website before, it is L-I-S-C, smallbusiness.org. Steve Hall also joining me, Vice President of Small Business Lending and based here in the city of Chicago. We don't hold it against Maurice that he flew in from New York, because he flew in from New York to be here with us tonight. We just heard a story about Evelyn's Food Love, which is a restaurant in Washington Park, and the jobs that she's created in the community, and of course the other money that she's putting into the economy in that neighborhood, sourcing products and really providing good nutrition in a food desert, which is a very real thing, primarily here in Chicago, but also in the outlying communities, some as well. Small Business Saturday has really gained traction over the past several years. But what are some of the great ways that we as consumers can make sure that we're putting our dollars where they're most beneficial?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, we can frequent the small businesses in our neighborhoods.
Throughout the year, yes.
Yep. All year long.
Yes.
So that Small Business Saturday lasts from January 1 to December 30th.
It's like Earth Day every day, yeah. But yeah.
Right? Small businesses are what a big part of the dynamism of every community, right? And when you think about small businesses, it's not just, you know, the fact that they give you the opportunity to purchase goods that you need and they keep your community safe and cared for. But usually that owner of that small business is also the coach of the local sports team, or is a person who's holding a leadership position on a community organization, or the person who you see at school working on the PTA. These are corporate citizens who know they have a stake in the health of the community, and so they're not just investing in their business, they are investing. It's like owning a home. They are investing in the resilience, if you will, of a neighborhood. And so it is important for us to make sure that we are keeping those small businesses healthy. And first and foremost, we can do that by being customers, faithful customers.
Right.
I would say, especially on Saturday, after all the great ads you see on Thursday and all the shopping you do on Friday, just do the same thing on Saturday, but don't go to the major retailers. I think the major retailers are still important in our communities, and they still, you know, they still play an important role. But there's nothing like Small Business Saturday. a lot of businesses will have up a banner that says, hey, support Small Business Saturday, and it'll kind of convince you to go in there. But don't go in and just buy something. Like, meet the owner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we forgot the power of the owner is here. You know, the president of this corporation is here. The CEO is here. And they're going to share you a unique story of, oh, I've been here for 12 years, and my daughter works here, and my brother works here. And if it wasn't for this store, my brother probably wouldn't have a job. So, you know, there's some real people stories that people forget. And on Small Business Saturday, it's an opportunity for you to walk in and just, you know, start a new relationship with somebody.
Let me suggest another way that can also help.
Mm-hmm.
Look, in this day and age when you can reach out and touch someone from an iPad or an iPhone or a computer, one of the things that we can do to be really helpful to small businesses is spread the word. Spread the word electronically about what, you know, how great the food is in Evelyn's, or how great the service is in fill in the blank local business, because they need marketing. They need to reach customers.
They need that grassroots support.
We can do that on their behalf by passing the word on digitally, which, you know, as you know now, with Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, it's a powerful way in which we can help these small businesses. And it takes the depressing of a button.
It's interesting you say that, because a few of the groups that I belong to within Facebook, one's a women's support group for, you know, our own businesses and things, and then another, which is a local community group, people said, you know what, I want to support you guys. Tell me what you do. Put a link for your small business. Tell me who I should be shopping with on Small Business Saturday. And it was very empowering for the people who were posting, but it was also neat to see how many people just in our own little cosmic group have a side hustle, if you will. or also have, there's a great Entree Kitchen, which is out in the suburbs, and one of the women posted that. They do pre-prepared meals. They're wonderful. I've used them for my parents. And it is, but it's one of those things I wouldn't have thought about them as a small business. She made this post, and I was like, that is a great gift option. Yeah. That is a wonderful thing to do and to share.
Well, I would say, you know, check in on Facebook, take a picture of what you're buying, share it on your personal page.
Give a review.
Twitter. You know, give a review. Because, I mean, we are a digital people now. I mean, we want to see it before we touch it, and seeing is believing. So, if you know, I have a small business customer, and they do pies, and like every Tuesday they put up a different pie on Twitter.
I need to know them.
Yeah, well, Spin and Jay. Okay. I'm going to throw them out there. They're on Augusta in California.
Okay.
But they put a different pie out once a week, and they have no flyers. They have no menus. The menu is a chalkboard, and people go to Twitter to see what pie it is, and then they run to the store to buy the pie.
Isn't it interesting?
You can't smell it.
You know, they've cracked the code.
You only have this Twitter image, and that's what small business is. It's so personal now. It can be really targeted. It can be really specific, and if you start that relationship on Saturday, you may find out they're doing something you really like. Like, you know, McDonald's was a small business in Chicago.
Yes, it was.
A long time ago, right? And that's the power of what a small business can be if they have the right level of support.
Mm-hmm. All right. The three of us discussed that we would probably chat for two segments. It is turning into three because I have more questions for you gentlemen. Steve Hall and Maurice Jones from LISC Small Business, the website LISC, LISCSmallBusiness.org. Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. I will be with you guys until 5 a.m. We're going to go to a quick break, and then I'll get you guys to the news on the other side right after this on WGN. Hannah Stanley here filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. I will be with you guys until 5 a.m. and then I will turn everything over for you guys to get your morning started. This is the week that we prepare to do most of our shopping that we will do all year. But Saturday is very special because it is Small Business Saturday. I wanted to make sure we featured that. But some of the people behind the small businesses are really the financiers. LISC Small Business does this. It is LISCSmallBusiness.org, that website, LISC SmallBusiness.org. Steve Hall and Maurice Jones joining me tonight from LISC Small Business. One of the things I wanted to talk to you, we've covered some of the great stories and ways that we can support small business. What are you gentlemen looking for when people come to you and say, I got an idea? Like how I think a lot of people, I know that when I come up with an idea, I go, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of fear. I don't know what I don't know. So what do people need to know before they approach you guys?
I would say it's, so we're a not-for-profit mission-based lender. So one of the things that we are very receptive to is just hearing your story out. You know, let's start a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no cost to pick up a phone and give us a call or make an inquiry on our website for one of our lenders to, you know, call you back. And just kind of tell us what your dream is. You know, I want to open up a radio station. I'm going to say, great. All right. Now, how much capital you got? You going to buy your own antenna? Maybe you'll get a license. You know, we'll go through the whole business model. And then people say, well, maybe I really don't want to open up a radio station. I just want to be a producer. Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so part of the what I call a discovery call, we want to discover what you're really trying to accomplish. That's number one. Number two, have those financials, tax returns, business plan, where you want to locate. Do you want to be in Wheaton or you want to be in Beverly? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, there's...
That's a
know,
difference, yeah.
There's a difference, right? So those economics, they change depending on where you want to be. And once you have the financials, be ready to make some personal investment into your dream. You mm-hmm. know, it would be great if we can look at somebody and say, hey, I want you to finance 100% of my dream because I don't believe in it at all. I think you should believe in all of it because...
That's what we see on Shark Tank sometimes. That is...
That's exactly what you see on Shark yeah. Tank. But, you know, every lender, whether it's a bank or a not-for-profit lender like LISC, we want you to, you know, show some enthusiasm into your dream. Like, we believe in you and we believe in what you can accomplish. But at the same time, we want to see you demonstrate an ability to, you know, do some self-sacrificing. You know, like, what are you willing to go without to make this a reality?
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people we want to help.
Yeah. I would just add to that, we are in the business of helping folks get started in business or expand in business who are underrepresented right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're particularly interested in the entrepreneur of color, the woman who's an entrepreneur, a small business owner, or someone in neighborhoods that are now underinvested when it comes to businesses. That's where LISC wants to be a leader. We want to help that person or those people access capital, get started, and catapult into the mainstream, right? The ideal for us is to be the first risk taker that banks and others come behind us and see that they can do business with these businesses and make money
mm-hmm.
and serve missions. So we are particularly interested in helping folks who are underinvested in our communities, who are underinvested in our communities. We are, one thing, you know, we've got these 30-some offices. Mm-hmm. I can tell you there is talent in every market. There is no absence of talent in America. We've got it. It's in spades. What we need is for organizations like ours to give people a chance.
The hand up, not the hand out. Yeah.
To invest, just like Steve said, invest in their dreams. Exercise tough love too, right? We want you to get a solid business plan together, and we're going to help you with that. We want all the financials in the world. And as Steve said, we want you to have passion for your dream and to be willing to sacrifice and invest in it. We want to be a partner with you in that. And then we want you in the mainstream.
You mentioned the tough love, but it seems to me like the people you would want to invest in would want the tough love.
Oh, yeah.
They would want, like, learn me good.
Yeah. That, that's right. They come to us saying, give me a chance.
Right.
You know, this is a great sports town. Mm-hmm. They're saying, put me in, coach.
Okay. Right?
And we want to put them in.
All right. So for the people listening, of course, Small Business Saturday, we were talking earlier about ways that you yourself can support either online, because so many people have a digital footprint now and e-commerce sites as well, but also to go in, build those relationships. My husband, who's not from Chicago, always laughs because he's like, you've always got a guy. I'm like, I got a guy. He's like, I need this random, you know, like nail that goes in this one piece. I'm like, I got a guy. But that's, I think we've lost a lot of that in, you know, but I'm a social person. I talk on the radio. I get to meet a lot of people. Somebody asks me about small business loans. I'm going to go, I got a guy. This is you guys, LISC Small Business. It is LISCSmallBusiness.org. Kind of tell me the timing. On average, I know that this is going to be different in every case, but somebody calls you on Monday and says, I got an idea. I need a guy, and they've got ducks in a row. What are we looking at as far as the ramp up time?
You know, I'll be honest, because we have a national program. I haven't met one efficient duck hunter yet.
All right.
So it's, you know, ideally our process could be, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. And the biggest,
that's actually, I'm kind of surprised it's that quick.
Yeah. And the biggest lag or what stretches it out is, people don't have their ducks in a row. I mean, if I'm a great, you know, healthcare provider and I have a home healthcare business and I'm traveling around and seeing clients from house to house, the one thing I don't care about is my balance sheet, my income statement, or my tax returns.
Yeah, you're not sitting at night doing QuickBooks.
You're not sitting at night doing QuickBooks. So they say, hey, I need $78,000 for a new van, and I need $200,000 for this. I go, great. When are you going to give me the tax returns? And they go, oh, I don't know. I'll get back to you in a week.
Yeah.
You know, I got a phenomenal veteran-owned business here that's about to get a major contract. And I'm really excited to work with them. And I hope y'all listening right now, because this is the pressure for you to turn in your tax return. So they're getting a $5 million contract potentially. And they're like, we need all these vans. And we're going to get the stuff to you. And I'm sitting there going,
TikTok.
All right. Don't get it the day you get the contract. So, you know, but we have a relationship. They've been asking questions for a year without applying.
Mm-hmm.
And because they've been asking questions, we've been able to help them, you know, understand what they're able to do. So we're providing them some great technical assistance to say, you know, if you did this, you'd probably be more eligible for this. But because of this, you're not eligible. So that time and that patience and that handholding we're doing, we're going to help this great veteran-owned business, you know, employ up to 40 to 50 people with this new loan.
Wow.
So that's the power of technical
assistance.
That's
community changing.
Community changing, right.
And that's, you know, this is part of what distinguishes our approach to lending from a mainstream financial institution. We invest our capital, yes, but just as powerful, it's this technical assistance, right? It is this helping folks navigate whatever waters they need. We take people wherever they are,
mm-hmm.
and we go on the journey with them. And when you've seen one borrower, you've seen one borrower. But our commitment is to both. It's a contact sport with us. We're not doing transactions. We're building relationships. Which means we take whatever time it takes. There's no statute of limitations. We take whatever time it takes to get people to a point where they can lift off.
Boy, you guys walk the walk. This is so great. I wanted to talk about Small Business Saturday, and instead of this, and in addition, it's turned into, I said robust at the beginning when we were off air. I was like, we'll see how robust this is. This is so robust. This is phenomenal. Steve Holland, Maurice Jones from LISC Small Business. If you have an idea, get thy ducks in a row and then call them. It is LISC Small Business, LISC smallbusiness.org. I can't thank you guys enough for coming in, and Maurice for flying in. You're so kind. The tickets aren't cheap, my friend. It's Thanksgiving week.
No, but
I appreciate
the
it.
The journey is priceless.
Oh, see. I knew I liked you guys. Hannah Stanley, we are going to be back right after this. I'm filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio on WGN. Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. Boy, those guests were great. I loved having them in. Maurice and Steve talking to me about LISC, small business loans, and how people can be a part of that. I want to remind everybody that we're going to talk about our most hated Christmas songs. I don't often talk about it. My kids know which songs I hate because I always flip the channels. I like the Christmas channel. I listen to the Christmas music. It's nice. It's happy. My kids get into the Christmas music spirit, Christmas spirit with the Christmas music. But we are already taking your calls and texts, 312-981-7200. If you want to get on the line, you can hold through the news so you can be a part of that segment that's going to be right after the news at 4 o'clock. Or you can just text those in, 312-981-7200. And then Dan and I will play selections of our most hated, most famous hated, most the ones we don't like. That's what we're going to be talking about. The other thing that we can talk about for a couple minutes before we go to news at the top of the hour, David Cassidy. David Cassidy passed away, which is making a ton of news. Very young. 67, I think. 67,
yeah.
60 young is what he was. That show, Partridge Family, which he was, of course, famous for being the oldest brother, the eldest son on that show. His real life stepmom, Shirley Jones, played his mom on that show. I actually worked with Danny Bonaducci, who played Danny Partridge on that show. That was a little bizarre. It was like, I watched you grow up and now you're my boss-ish, sort of. A lot of people here worked with him, though. They worked when he was on The Loop here in Chicago. He was on the air. I actually worked for his TV talk show that filmed over at WTTW for a while, Danny Bonaducci. But David Cassidy was a huge, gigantic heartthrob for only a show that aired for 4 years. At one point, he sold more records than Elvis or something silly. He was Mr. Tiger Beat. That's who he was. I remember my grandparents' next door neighbors, the Lucases. One of the daughters had the David Cassidy poster pinned up in her room. She loved him with his feathered hair. Here's the thing, though. Dan and I were talking about the fact that that's our three, right? That's the celebrity deaths come in three.
What did we decide was the three?
Well, I think what we decided was Malcolm from AC/DC, Della Reese, and David Cassidy. But Grandpa Huxtable died. And I apologize for not knowing his name. But Grandpa Huxtable was the man who played the grandfather, Bill Cosby's father. Everybody knows him as Grandpa Huxtable. He passed away, I think,
Earl Hyman is the gentleman's name.
Thank you, Earl. Sure. Very fine actor. He passed away. But because of the internet and the social media sites in general, how deep we go on celebrity deaths is a little crazy. Where it's not like A-list, B-list, C-list celebrities. Like if a Kardashian cat dies, I hear about it and people are like, well, that's our third. I'm like, no, it's not. I have no idea where. So I think as far as people going, oh, yeah, him, Malcolm from AC/DC, David Cassidy, Della Reese. What did I mean? do you think that we need to? I think Della Reese ranks.
I think so, because she was like a singer, and then kind of later in life she found that TV show.
She was on a couple of TV shows. Yeah, she would have been considered a full-on actress in addition to being a very established musician singer. Yeah, Touched by an Angel, which she wasn't even like the main character, but she had several other programs too. So yeah, I think those are our three. So we're done for today. That's what I say.
Someone 847 texting in, Mel Tillis, country legend.
That's who I was thinking of, Mel Tillis. And actually I felt a little bit, well, one, I apologize to the entire Tillis family that I forgot, but I felt like he didn't get as much press as was deserved. Because he was very groundbreaking and not necessarily definitely in country music, but really because of his lisp, his stutter, not his lisp. He had a stutter, but didn't, obviously not when he was singing. But yeah, thank you, 847, because you're absolutely right. Mel Tillis. So now what do we do? Because now we're at five. If we count Earl, Grandpa Huxtable, David Cassidy, Della Reese, and Malcolm from AC/DC. Please text into 312-981-7200 to figure out who else we're going to add to this list. And really, how closely grouped do they need to be?
Well, I mean, it was always arbitrary anyway. It feels like it's getting thrown more out of whack because every decade, you know, pop culture gets more self-referential and more fragmented where, you know, more people are fans of, because of where we are in American pop culture, age-wise, you know, the TV age, stars from that era of TV are starting to drop, and you know, late 60s, early 70s musicians, you know, Bowie and the, you know,
right,
they're all the people from that era are starting to drop.
Bowie hurts still.
Bowie hurt. Tom Petty still hurts.
Tom Petty definitely hurts. The other thing is too, for sure, we're in the baby boomer generation where we're starting to lose baby boomers in a higher number. Right. You know, the World War II generation has been, we've been losing them for a while in greater mass. Now the baby boomers are starting. So when we're going to start losing those celebrities, that's going to feel like it's really developed. The other thing, too, is while you might have really liked a band, right? Like we all knew the Beatles. Sure. But they're, let's say, Jethro Tull. You know, do we know all the members of Jethro Tull? I don't. But, you know, their bass player could die and it'll be like, oh, that was everything to me. And all of a sudden I know who their bass player is. I don't know that would count as a celebrity death for me.
Yeah, for you, right? But obviously,
for
you know, I think Bob Kessler and I were in here one day talking about Chris Squire, the bass player from Yes, which, you know, they got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year. And it was for me, because like we know who he was, it was weird for him to be gone in that situation.
Right. And for me, I'm like, Yes was a band, right? ? There. So, but because of social media, and I know you and I know Bob Kessler, so then you guys would post something about it. And then I'm like, oh, wow, well, that's a really big deal because he meant something to you guys. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it affects the masses in the same way.
Right.
So I think that things are a little bit disjointed in how we view the three. Who were the three? You know, when we lost Prince, that was obviously a big one. Everybody knew Prince. Same with Bowie. We had some big ones last year. 2017 hasn't been quite as aggressive.
Yeah, I'm trying to think because I saw a clip of somebody not too long ago and it was like, oh, it was somebody who died recently. But it feels, again, it feels like so many have been happening that you lose track. Like, oh, I forgot.
Right.
This person is gone and we're not going to get any more work from them.
Right. No, it's very, I actually was, the kids had some cartoon on PBS and Joan Rivers was doing a voiceover and it threw me for a second because it was kind of nice to hear her. And at the same time, I felt I was a little bummed because I'm not going to hear her anymore. Because Joan Rivers, she's Joan Rivers. You guys, we're going to get you to news. Keep those hated Christmas songs coming up. Really, just the ones that you can't stand listening to. You have to turn them off. You would burn copies if you could. Think Disco Demolition, but for Christmas music. That 312-981-7200. We're going to get you guys to news just on the other side of this break. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio. More on WGN after this. Here I was expecting a Christmas song. Hannah Stanley with you tonight, filling in, I guess this morning. I'm always a little bit off kilter when I do the overnight shifts, either Patty's shift or Nick's shift, because it's like it's already Wednesday, but in my brain it's still Tuesday because I haven't slept yet.
Yeah, the overnight shift will do that for you.
It'll mess with you. It will throw you off. I will be starting my Wednesday morning errands in a few hours. So that's where I'm at mentally. 312-981-7200. We've been talking about how we are going to be talking about the most hated Christmas songs.
Which is why I did not want to come in with one of the songs, because I didn't want to give people the wrong idea.
Yeah, no, because we don't want people to think that we enjoy those songs. Phones are already lighting up. Get your calls in now, 312-981-7200. This is not one of my more hated songs, but Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. I have a lyric that I miss here that I can't not hear. I'll talk about that in a second. I don't like George Michael. I love George Michael. George Michael was a tremendous talent. But I don't like Last Christmas.
100% agree.
Right?
I like George Michael, but I do not like that song.
What?
Either.
It's so whiny.
I change it immediately.
Immediately.
That's number one on my list, and a close second. I can't remember what she sang, but I heard a Christmas song by Barbra Streisand one time, and I like her
that
too.
That seems interesting.
But that was one of the worst Christmas songs I've ever heard. I think it was Jingle Bells, but I'm not sure.
Really? Dan, Barbra Streisand, Jingle Bells. Barbra Streisand singing Christmas standards makes sense to me, but Jingle Bells, just because of her styling, doesn't.
And that's what it was. I hope he can find it. I think it was Jingle Bells. It was not good. Not good.
I just can't imagine her getting all Barbara'd, you know, with the nails and the jingle bells and the jingle bells. They're jingling all the way. I can't do it. I can't. Not only can I not do a Barbara impression, but I can't imagine her singing Jingle Bells. That's very peculiar to me. Phones are lighting up, 312-981-7200. We're going to get to them in just a second. Dan is screening them, and we are also taking your texts at 312-981-7200. Yeah, there's a few. Have yourself a Merry Little Christmas. There's a line that says, happy golden days of yore, and I always hear up yours. And now you will as well. So you're welcome. Nick is laughing. I can see him.
Which song was this?
Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Have yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Yeah.
I love that song.
I do too. And
up
now
yours.
And
okay.
You will hear, instead of your, you will hear up yours. And
well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Because now I will laugh every time I hear it.
Esmeralda, do you have a hated Christmas song?
I don't. Really? Maybe more, sadly enough, more of the classics.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
I like more the modern ones. The Mariah Carey's,
oh,
All I Want for
kidding?
Christmas.
Yeah. Darlene Love, by the way. Baby, Please Come Home. That's my all-time favorite.
Yeah, like all those, the Motown stuff, like I really dig the more, like very, I guess, formal Christmas songs.
Silver Bells.
Yeah, I take them or leave them.
Okay. I Heard the Ships on Christmas Day. Come on. You know who does a great Christmas album? We're really getting off topic because now I'm talking about good stuff. But Bare Naked Ladies have a great Christmas album. That's good stuff. Good versions. Jazzy. Happy. Peppy. I like that. But there's some old classics that I'm like, really? Like, the David Bowie, Bing Crosby. That's terrible. Do you know which one I'm talking about? Little Drummer Boy, Rapum Pum Pum Pum.
That's not the worst.
It's pretty
I think
bad.
Because David Bowie it's the is only... there, and it's just funny. Like, why are you hanging out
he
with
He did
David
it because
Bowie,
his
Bing
mom
Crosby?
Liked Bing Crosby. He did it for his mom. That's totally
Well, that's a
true.
Good reason.
Yeah. His mom liked Bing Crosby, but really, couldn't they have picked a better song? Rapum-pum-pum-pum. It's the worst. I hate it. Yeah, I don't like Bells on Christmas Day. I don't know. Dan, what else are we got? I know we had callers and now they're all gone. Dan's making lists. I can see him working tremendously.
I got one for me.
Yes.
It took me a minute to pull it up here, but I think you might be able to figure out who this is.
Okay.
The red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose.
I know we said no versions, but...
And if you ever saw it...
Who is this?
You would even say it glowed.
It's Regis.
Oh, my God. Of course it is. I can't not hear it now.
I think, yeah, he jazzes it up a little bit later on.
Of course he does. Does he...
Okay, that's an instrumental.
Yeah, but Rudolph is actually a pretty... solid song. It doesn't bother me. If it comes on, I kind of sing along. I don't know. But that's you just don't like the Regis version?
I just thought it was, like, it's ridiculous that it even exists.
Although it wouldn't surprise me if William Shatner has a Christmas album.
Oh, let's look into that before the end of the show.
We will have to look. 312-981-7200 if you have any other. Who are some of, we've been getting calls for a while.
Yeah, how about this one? Caller Jill called in at the top of the show with one for me. And how about this one?
Oh, yes.
It's Christmas Eve and these shoes are just her size.
This is... Yes, and didn't they make a show out of this?
It was, I think it was like a TV movie. Like Rob Lowe was in it.
Rob Lowe? Of course he was. When he's too busy, when he's not busy playing Drew Peterson.
Pre-like Parks and Rec career revival Rob Lowe.
Oh, yeah, sometime in between Wayne's World and Parks and Rec. Yeah, that was like an ABC Family 25 Days of Christmas special. Hallmark, maybe. Did that. That song's not good. It's too sappy.
It's very maudlin.
All right. So I've hit mine. I've talked about Bing Crosby and the little drummer boy with David Bowie. Even though David Bowie is in it, I still can't. It doesn't get a pass.
David Bowie technically uses his voice to say words on the trail. You can't even consider it.
It's not singing.
Participating, yeah.
No. But, I mean, there's a video of them doing it together. I believe he was smoking in it. But
I'm sure. Everyone smoked on TV in the 70s.
but that's one that still gets airplay, and it goes off immediately. It's the worst.
You ever seen the Saturday Night Live sketch with Jimmy Fallon as Bowie? I can't remember who plays Bing Crosby, but they're doing that bit, and then they just go into a, what, why are we doing this? I'm half Jewish. This is messed up.
Oh, it's the worst. I really, there are some that just shouldn't be played. They should not get airtime. And yet, like Bells on Christmas Day, Silver Bells, I like. That's good. But yeah. Did you find the Barbra Streisand Jingle Bells? Did you hear when Vic was talking? He thinks there's a Barbra Streisand Jingle Bells version.
Yeah, give me a minute to find that. I got one. If you want to do one, do you want to do one more before we hit the break?
Yeah, let's do one more.
All right, texter from, let me find it here, the 309, which I don't know the origin of the area code, but texter from the 309 laid down this gem.
Grandma got run over by a reindeer.
Yes, I hate this song.
Walking home from our house Christmas Eve. You can say there's no such thing as Santa, but as for me and Grandpa, we believe.
It really is the worst. Also a show they made, because they can't just leave well enough alone.
No.
That was an animated cartoon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, I don't. I loved that song when I was, you know, in eighth grade. But now it's played. That's what it is. Overplayed. All right. You work on Barbra Streisand. Here's the thing we want to talk about when we come back. There are some ridiculous things that we have seen on Christmas lists this year, not Patty Patty's heated toilet seat. Gwyneth Paltrow has done it again with a ridiculous list of things that she would recommend be on your gift list. And we want to know what you guys think are silly things you've seen on recommended gift guides. 312-981-7200. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Hey, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. We're dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh.
This is a great poll.
Laughing all the way.
Vic has walked away from his desk, but I am sure wherever he is listening to this, he is horrified. I mean, honestly, it's a nice arrangement. It's just terrible. That's Barbara Streisand singing Jingle Bells, and thank you for that suggestion on Christmas Songs You Hate by Vic Vaughn. We are still accepting your submissions, 312-981-7200. In the meantime, we're going to also talk about some of the most ridiculous things we've seen on gift guides. Boy, that Gwyneth Paltrow, how much I don't like her. I want to like her. She seems to mean well, which is not a great thing to say about somebody, but she really does. She has that little Goop website where she tells people how to live their best life. Gwyneth tries to be Oprah. But here's the thing. Oprah has stuff on her gift guide that, you know, multiple price points. Stuff that's practical. Gwyneth puts on her Goop site, maybe you would need a personal yellow submarine. That's a thing. A personal yellow submarine. One of the other things on her gift list is an antique French boat and oars for $7,995. It's not just a French boat, it's an antique French boat with oars. Because maybe you need to traverse some waterways. I don't know. A sidecar for your motorcycle, but it's not just a normal sidecar. It's like a sidecar that's kind of antique. And that's $15,000. Don't worry, people. She drops down in price point to normal people. It's a silk toothbrush for $42. If I know one thing about silk is that it's not supposed to get wet. That's when I have worn silk fabric, anything, don't get it wet. It really messes with it. Here's the thing, though. Last year, she had toothpaste that was $118. So that just goes right in line with that. Hey, Dan, do you want a backyard chicken coop made of cedar?
I was just thinking about the chicken coop because Deadspin does a every year, Drew McGarry, who does great work for Deadspin, mm-hmm. runs down. He goes through the Williams Sonoma catalog, which is it's products similar to what Gwyneth likes to hawk.
Yeah.
And they also have a chicken coop. I think this is a lower price point built exclusively for us in their urban garden workshop. Laughing chicken coops have a classic old world design constructed from the highest quality reclaimed redwood. All for the price of $759.95 with painted chicken.
That's half price. Gwyneth's is cedar, which sure, it smells good when it's contained in your closet, but and you know, it's going to weather nicely, but so is redwood. My kids have a playset that's redwood. That thing's great. You stain it like once every 2 years. Gwyneth's backyard cedar chicken coop, $1,500. By the way, if you want an at-home float tank spa, $16,500. What else does your boy over at Deadspin have on the Williams Sonoma ad?
It's a lot of like food, but food that's readily available elsewhere. Here's a, typical like food serving, like a waffle batter dispenser. It's like a caulk gun that you shoot waffle batter out of into the waffle maker.
Yeah.
For the, you know, 2 times a year that you make waffles.
Yeah.
$29.95, which is not bad, but you could also use a spoon for $0.
You could. Now, I will tell you, I have a pancake pencil, which is what it's called, but it's sort of, okay, so think of it this way. It's a ketchup, You know, like when you go to the store and you get like, not the store, but like a restaurant and they have the red and yellow for ketchup and mustard, the squeezy bottles. So it's kind of like that, but for pancake batter. And it's nice because you can like, you know, if you're trying to make fancy or small or big or whatever, that's great. But I think mine was like maybe $15, which is still more than you would spend on the ketchup dispenser. But no. I probably should have just bought a ketchup dispenser.
How about this one? Callie's Charleston Biscuits, flaky, buttery, and made by hand by celebrated caterer Callie White. A set of 24 cheddar biscuit things, $72.
Okay, wait. They're made by hand by her, all of them? That's my question.
That's what it says.
Well, see, you would think for $72, because that's small batch. That seems ridiculous if they're saying they're made by her. It's her recipe, sure, I get it. But if she's not in there with, you know, like the pastry cutter, I'm going to be a little disappointed. That's all there is to it. I saw a half Christmas tree. I've never seen a half Christmas tree before. It's a Target.
Which, like a top bottom half?
No.
Or halved front to back?
Good question. Cross section. I guess it's not even a cross section, but it was top to bottom cut so that you could put it up against a wall. When I thought about it, it made sense. But the way they had it, it was on Target.com. I don't think they sell them in the stores. And I would know because I'm there all the time. It was top to bottom. You can put it up against a wall then for smaller spaces.
That's actually a good idea. I don't know. Reasonably priced, dare I say?
That's what was interesting, $75. And I think for a 7.5 foot pre-lit tree, you should just buy two and put them together. Because I think a normal full 7.5 foot pre-lit tree would cost you more than $150. So that's my suggestion to you. Go buy two half Christmas trees. Boy, this show is flying. 4:28, we're going to get you to news on the other side of the break. In the meantime, Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio on WGN. Oh, Esmeralda's bopping her head like she enjoys it. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio. Esmeralda.
Those are some talented dogs.
Yes, or editors. Some talented editors putting that together. Vic, I don't know if you heard it. We found the horrific Barbra Streisand.
Did you play it? I missed it.
Yes, it's so bad.
So it was Jingle Bells.
Oh, it was. It's a jazzy Jingle Bells.
That's right.
It's so bad.
I told you. I warned you.
I don't know that I can ever not hear it. It's going to just...
It was... That may be number one. It's tied with Last Christmas I Gave You My Heart.
Oh, that's so bad. Yeah, no. What's interesting, though, is, I mean, I listen to a lot of Christmas music, and I don't know that I've ever heard that version. It does not get a lot of airplay, and I think that speaks to maybe the quality. I feel like the Rockettes might be the only people who ever utilized that. That's got, like, kick line written all over it.
I mean, if you're a huge Streisand fan,
sure,
you probably like that. But anyone else, you would not pick that version of Jingle Bells.
No, it just
ever.
Seems frantic. It's too, I don't know. It's almost staccato. It's too, like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not a big fan. Here's another thing I'm not a fan of, people. The Mackenzie Childs Courtly Czech Moosehead. This is in Neiman Marcus's... annual gift guide in the $8,000 and above range.
You showed me the picture, but I didn't get a good look. It's an authentic moose head.
That's arguable. I believe it's a piece of sculpture that looks like a moose head, but it is black and white checked. And then the ears look like they are on the outside black and white checked, but then painted some sort of green on the inside. And then the antlers are golden. I don't know if they're actually gold. But yes, it is $15,000. Yeah. Hand-painted moose head form. It is hard foam using acrylic paints. Dude, I have acrylic paints at my house. I do crafts with them. They're selling this for $16,000. a mousse form. The wreath is made of preserved ferns and other materials. So this maybe looks like this is just a seasonal thing. Handcrafted moss decorated antlers. Made in the USA, $16,000. $15,000. But the shipping's $6.95, so that's going to take you right up there. I don't feel like that's something they're going to have at the Michigan Avenue store.
How about this one? An acorn twine holder, polished alder wood with 76 yards of linen twine, made in Italy, price $26 for a wooden acorn that you, I mean, you have to store all your twine somewhere.
Acorns are tiny. Why?
I mean, it's like
need...
bigger than a regular acorn, but okay. It's acorn shaped.
But okay, here's the thing. One, when you have twine, it's usually on some sort of a spool. So is the acorn, because acorns kind of come to a point at the end. How does the twine stay on it? I'm very confused. At $26, that at least is in normal person price range. It just seems silly. But it's linen twine. That's a thing. It's ridiculous. Let's go back to the half a Christmas tree. I like the half Christmas tree. You can get that at Target. Esmeralda, have you seen anything crazy this Christmas season that you're like, that's just ridiculous? That's just so silly. Nothing.
I agree.
Esmeralda, I love you. Yeah, I think linen, does linen twine make a difference? Isn't twine just twine? Why would it be linen? It's cotton. Linen's a type of cotton.
Because it's made of linen?
I don't linen. Know. But honestly, twine. I mean, $26 is not terrible compared to $15,000 for a checked moose head. There was another Hermes watch on the Neiman Marcus list that was already sold out. And that was, I think, $50,000. So... oh, people. We've all gone mad. This is why the terrorists hate us. It's true. Here's something that we all hate, and yet we can take pride in. Midway has been found, Midway Airport, to be found the worst American airport to depart from over Thanksgiving. This is not just based on last year. Because actually, I mean, the past few days have been great for travel. There shouldn't really have been many delays. There shouldn't be a delay today or tomorrow on Thanksgiving Day. Thanksgiving Day is usually an easy day to fly anyway because everybody's already there. Nobody wants to fly on Thanksgiving. But Time Out Chicago is reporting that that we're valid in thinking that Midway is just really terrible. We are number one. We're number one. The Bureau of Transportation statistics collected over the past 5 years from 2012 to 2016 that 24% of departures from Midway get delayed during the Thanksgiving travel season with an average delay time of 55 minutes. O'Hare, only number nine on the list, only the ninth worst. So really, our two major airports are top 10 in the entire country. So yay us. That's, I don't know. O'Hare, though, only sees a delay of 19% of their Thanksgiving flights. However, their average delay is 64 minutes. So I would almost rather be delayed less. But there's more likelihood that you'll be delayed. I don't know. I prefer Midway. It's easier to get to from places in the city. Parking is easier. And I don't feel like I'm usually delayed there. I feel like O'Hare, though, kind of a goat rodeo. That's a possibility. Outside of Chicago, Oakland International and Houston's Hobby Airports, that's on the south side of Houston, they come in a close second with 23% of their departures delayed. Hobby is also another smaller airport. I wonder why, and Oakland's not a huge airport either. So I wonder if it's something having to do with the priority of takeoffs and landings in those areas. That's what I think.
It's got to just be a volume thing, right? With these smaller ones, Love Field.
Was Love on the list too?
Yeah, Love Field is next, BWI.
Yeah, because these are all kind of the secondary airports.
Newark, yeah.
So I think you're right, where they're not necessarily getting the priority of landing and the air traffic. I don't know. It's very interesting. I love Midway. Take the orange line. It's great. Even from the suburbs, it's super easy. It's better than O'Hare for me. Which one do you prefer?
I typically fly out of Midway if I can, you know, if catch a domestic flight there, you know, it's because I'm in the Southwest suburbs. So,
so shoot up,
you know, Cicero, you know, Southwest Highway, Cicero Avenue, you're there. Yeah.
Yeah. That's easy. No, I'm coming from the Western suburbs, so it's equidistant, but it's super easy. Parking, easy, done, finished. You know what? We're going to take a quick break. I cannot believe how fast the show has gone. Flying.
When the clock strikes half past six, babe, time to head for Golden Light. Hey, it's a good time for a great taste dinner at McDonald's. It's Mac tonight. Come on, make it Mac tonight.
I was always so confused by that ad campaign. Hannah Stanley here, wrapping up the last little bit of Nick DiGilio's show this evening. Big news, and I wasn't entirely sure why. So we're talking about it. They're tearing down the McDonald's Museum, which is a replica of the original McDonald's in Des Plaines. Dan Long, have you been there?
Can't say that I have, no.
I haven't either. I remember driving past the original McDonald's when I was a little kid, but that was still the original McDonald's that was there in Des Plaines. They then tore that down and built a replica of it, which they turned into a museum. But I've never been there. And I don't know that I've never in my memory heard anyone say,
no,
we went to the McDonald's Museum. Apparently, it suffered from a tremendous amount of flooding, and because of that, they stopped opening it up to visitors. People could look in the windows.
Well, the best museums are the ones where you can't go inside.
I mean, what kind of a museum? So basically, you're looking at a dollhouse of a McDonald's.
You're peeking in the window to see an old-timey shake machine.
Right.
How did that not draw crowds?
And my question was, when they were originally still opening the doors, it wasn't an active McDonald's. It was a McDonald's museum, right?
Yeah, I don't even know what it was like when you could walk in there. But
so if anybody's been there, 312-981-7200, I can only assume that they sold merch, as we say in the industry, that there was some way for them to make some sort of money off of this. And now, since the doors have been closed, it's shocking to me that it's not the tourist destination that it used to be. People don't flock.
I think that's a revenue stream they could cash in on still. You know, I mean, they're moving the headquarters to Chicago. Maybe you build something there.
And they will come. That's what they say. If you build
McDonald's, is kind of a big deal.
It is.
There's history there.
Yes. The recreated restaurant has not regularly welcomed visitors since closing to the public 10 years ago. So if we're sitting here looking at the P&L, there's no reason for it. They have to maintain the property, but they're not able to make any money off of it. Right? They're not charging people to park there.
No.
They're not charging people to look in the window. I don't think they're making any money off of people looking there. Like, they're not selling anything to them. Does it then inspire them to go to a McDonald's across the street? I don't know. But wouldn't those people likely go to a McDonald's anyway? It's usually, if you want McDonald's, that's kind of the thing you want. They're saying that the building's location and the feasibility to reopen and maintain it led them to the decision to raise the property. It will always have a special place in our company's history. They are applying for a permit this week to demo the structure. A spokeswoman said the exact date of demolition is unknown. Obviously, they don't have permits for it. That's kind of a thing. They will remove and preserve anything of historical value before the work begins. The original McDonald's restaurant in Des Plaines was the 9th restaurant in the country, but the company considers the location to be the birthplace of the modern version of the chain. I think that's where they put the Golden Arches for the first time. That's what I believe. I could be incorrect, but that's what I think. Company considers the location to be the birthplace of the modern version of the chain, and they currently have 36,000 restaurants around the world today. They've made some interesting choices. They're leaving Oak Brook, obviously. That's a big one. Mac Tonight, that was weird. That was that was a strange quasi-misstep, if you will. The what was it? The McBLT, where they had it on the two sides of the thing, and then you had to merge it together so the cold side stayed cool and the hot side stayed hot. But then you still had to put them together. I think it was also that the lettuce wouldn't wilt before they gave it to you. Remember when they still had styrofoam?
Yeah, very faintly,
a little bit. Yeah, that was great. We loved that because the burger actually was nice and toasty warm instead of the paper. I've never heard anything about the McDonald's Museum. So to me, it doesn't faze me that they're tearing it down. Is anybody upset about this? Were you upset about this?
Again, you know, never been there, not particularly, but I think I've, as a fast food aficionado, I don't know if you can tell or not. Again, since they're moving the headquarters downtown, you know, back in on Oprah land.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's going on the Harpo land.
Maybe you try to cash in on some of that history, you know. Chicagoans love a good museum.
They do, although I feel like the Oprah Museum might be a bigger draw to some. But if it were still, they would have kept Harpo. But yeah, it just doesn't seem to me that it was a good concept. If the land kept flooding and they weren't able to open it to people and they weren't making any money off of it, they now want to donate the land to the city of Des Plaines. But since it floods all the time, the city of Des Plaines might not want it. I don't. What are they going to put there? A plaque? A plaque that says something. But what, I mean, really though, what, let's you and I, Dan Long, conceive of a fast food restaurant museum. What would we put in it?
That's mm-hmm. a good question.
Old shake machines.
Yeah, you know, old, you know, equipment. Probably a lot of like marketing materials, I get, you know, because people love nostalgia and.
That's incredibly collectible.
We were just talking about the styrofoam containers.
Sure. No, and that's actually something where almost that's where you could have made some money is by having collectible items that were for sale, possibly, or at least, you know, this is kind of the alpha of this poster or of this ad campaign where people could go and see and aspire to have their collections. McDonald's memorabilia is incredibly collectible. People pay high prices for it. But they didn't have to pay to go to the museum, and that was the error. I don't know that I would necessarily go to a food museum. Coca-Cola, also a big partner of McDonald's, very collectible. They really needed to get some cross-promotion. Because Coke does a great job down there in Atlanta.
Do they have a thing in Atlanta?
Oh, yeah. Big. At the bottling company.
Okay.
But you can go in, and you can see a whole history. And you can tour it. You can buy things so they can make money off of people. That's how they do it. Oh, McDonald's. Oh, McDonald's had a museum. E-I-E-I-O. That's what I say. Let's go to break now. We'll come back. We'll thank our guests. And then I will make sure I get you guys turned over to Dave Plyer in time for the news and for the morning bell. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio, WGN.